Are there examples of foods that many people would put into the healthier category? They typically wouldn't associate with processed foods. It's not Doritos, it's not McDonald's, but it still nonetheless is refined or processed to a degree
Sure.
that can also contribute to these things. And if so, what are some examples of those foods?
I'll give you two that people think are good. Whole grains and yogurt. So let's talk about those. We'll do one at a time. Whole grains. So, whole grain bread. Is it whole grain? Says whole grain right on the label. Is it whole grain? What's the definition of whole grain? There is none. There is none. That's the key. There is no definition of whole grain because there's a whole grains council, but that doesn't mean that there's a definition of whole grain. And this is, where the rubber hits the road in terms of the semantics of what the food industry is doing to cover up its dastardly deeds. So let's talk about whole grains. Here's a grain right here, okay? The outside is the husk, the kernel, if you will, okay? It's all fiber. Then there's the inside. The inside has two parts. There's the starchy endosperm, where you get flour from, and there's also the germ. And that's where the nucleic acids, the polyphenols, the flavonoids, all the good stuff that you're supposed to get in whole grain is. Everybody with me? So, three parts. The husk, if it stays intact, it's a whole grain. You swallow it. Okay, say in a whole grain, a true piece of whole grain bread, and we'll talk about what that is in a minute. The enzymes in your intestine have to strip this husk off. And we don't have enzymes that work very well for that. So it takes a long time before you can actually get the what's inside to actually be liberated. So it's further down the intestine, into the jejunum, into the ileum, the further parts of the intestine. And there's a good chance that the microbiome is going to want those for their own purposes so that you're feeding them. And so that's why a whole grain is good, because it's a delivery system for getting the food further down the intestine to feed your bacteria. Now, whole grain bread in the supermarket is not whole grain because the grains have been pulverized to smithereens. All right. And that liberated the flour. It also liberated the nucleic acids and polyphenols and all that. And they're still there. Okay. But here's the problem. Those will go rancid now that they've been liberated. So when they're as whole grains, you can store them for months at a time. That's what Pharaoh did, back in Egypt. They kept them whole. And so you can store them. But as soon as you've pulverized them, now they're on the clock. Now they're going to go rancid. And one of the reasons food goes rancid is because of the liberation of proteins and nucleic acids, which taste terrible if they are oxidized. So the food industry will pulverize the whole grain, and they will then sift off the nucleic acids, that the germ, and they will leave you with this powder that still has some fiber, but not very much, and it's not surrounding the starchy endosperm. Now you consume it, and you can't set up that gel that I talked about before. And so the starches are immediately acted on by the saliva and by the stomach acid, and they start breaking up. And now you liberate all of that glucose, and it goes via the portal vein to the liver, generates an insulin spike. and you're off to the races in terms of chronic metabolic disease. The point was, because the food industry, because the bread company started with whole grain, they're allowed to say it's whole grain. But it's not whole grain. So what is whole grain bread? What does it look like? Can you buy it in the store? And the answer is yes. Not at Safeway, but you can buy it at Whole Foods. You can buy it at, you know, specialty shops that cost more. It's half the size. A loaf of a 1 pound loaf is half the size of a regular loaf, and it's dense. Okay. The way you can tell whether or not something's truly whole grain or not is if I threw it at your head, would I knock you out? Okay. If it would knock you out, then it's whole grain. If it would bounce off your head and make you say, "What the hell did you do that for?" then it's not whole grain. Okay. Because real German fitness bread, okay, is it's sliced very thin. It makes a lousy sandwich because it doesn't have a lot of gluten liberated. So it doesn't hold together as, you know, spongy. That's why, you know, we don't make, you know, kids' sandwiches for school out of whole grain bread, is because the, you know, the bread will tend to fall apart. But that's true whole grain bread. So you can buy it, but you can't make a sandwich out of it. So that's one thing, whole grains. Number two, yogurt. Now, yogurt has active cultures, right? Well, maybe. Maybe they do. Not necessarily. They're supposed to. And active cultures help populate the intestine with, quote, good bacteria. In particular, lactobacillus, bifidobacteria. We've now found that Bifidobacterium infantis seems to be a very good one, is one of the things that helps babies. And it seems to be a positive one. So they're adding that now to all of these, to kombuchas and to, you know, other fermented foods in an attempt to try to get them, you know, down into your intestine. The question is, if any of these foods worked, why would you have to keep eating them? If any of these probiotic supplements with these various bacteria worked, why would you have to keep taking them? If they're live cultures, they should set up shop, right? They reach the intestine. It's nice and dark and murky and, you know, all sorts of stuff in there. And certainly bacteria are growing in there. Why don't they just set up shop? Why don't they, you know, distribute themselves throughout the intestine and you only have to take them once? And the answer is because they're not living anymore. They died. And that's the reason why you needed them, is because your own died. Because you have an inhospitable intestinal environment. So you can take probiotics till the cows come home. And they're not going to make a damn bit of difference unless they can grow. And they're not growing. And the reason is because the environment in your intestine is inhospitable in the first place. So you have to change the environment that the bacteria find themselves in. So you don't need a probiotic. You need something that will let the bacteria grow. You need a prebiotic. That's food for bacteria. That's what a prebiotic is. Well, what's the prebiotic that's in real food? In all real food, fiber. Because that's the food for bacteria. That's what bacteria chew on. That's what bacteria use to make short-chain fatty acids, which are not only beneficial for them, but beneficial for you too, because they suppress the cytokine response. They suppress the inflammatory response. They've been shown to be anti-inflammatory, anti-cardiovascular disease. You need those short-chain fatty acids. Acetate, propionate, butyrate. And the only way to get them is to let your bacteria chew on fiber. Well, the fiber's in the real food, but it's been taken out of the processed food. So You have to protect your liver so you don't get the insulin resistance, and you have to feed your gut so you don't get the inflammation, which will also lead to the insulin resistance. You do those two things, protect the liver, feed the gut, and now you've got metabolic health. But there's only one substrate that does that. That's called real food.
For someone who's seeing, and this happens a lot for people as they start to clean up their diet a little bit, and they're wary of a lot of the gluten-free foods, which actually spike their blood sugar more than even just regular, you know, true whole wheat, right? In your example.
Yep.
So as people start to clean up their diet, sometimes they end up withering down and not having as much fiber. In some instances, there are individuals who also have very reactive gut microbiomes and intestinal systems because of a lifelong of antibiotics and other challenges that you led to earlier. If you had to highlight a few fibers that are gentle enough that people can start to work their way up so that they don't have that heavy response of bloating or other challenges that people often write into this podcast saying like, hey, I'm trying to include more fiber and diversity, but I'm having a lot of challenges. Would you give a few an honorary mention?
Okay. So the fiber in real food does work, but it doesn't work for everybody. Real food usually works. There are people who are, quote, gluten sensitive. I'm one of them, by the way. That doesn't mean you have celiac disease. And I learned this the hard way, and learned it from the head of pediatric gastroenterology at the University of Chicago. One of the original celiac researchers, his name is Stefano Guandolini. Okay, he back in the early 80s, he was the one who figured out this whole tissue transglutaminase business, and you know, celiac, and he ultimately, you know, came to U of Chicago, and he's now head of the division there, and he's the one who explained all this to me. So a lot of people say they're gluten sensitive, but they don't have celiac disease. They're not gluten sensitive. They're wheat sensitive. That's different, right? And here's how we know that that's true. You take their white cells, people like myself, okay, who I don't eat regular bread anymore. I eat gluten-free bread. Not because I'm trying to escape gluten, I'm trying to escape wheat, all right? And the only way to escape wheat is to have gluten-free bread. So here's what happens. You take their white cells, you throw them in a dish, and you throw gluten on them, nothing happens. You throw rye on them, nothing happens. You throw barley on them, nothing happens. You throw wheat on them, they go bonkers. All right. Now, in a celiac patient, you throw wheat, barley, rye, or gluten, and they go bonkers no matter what. So clearly, these people are having a reaction to wheat, but they're not having a reaction to gluten. And it turns out wheat is a very complex organism. It is hexaploid, not diploid. There are 700 different antigens in wheat. The two that make up gluten, called glutenin and gliadin, are the ones that, you know, celiac patients are allergic to. You can be allergic to one of the other 698. And different people are allergic to different ones. So there's no easy test. The point is that the people who say that they are gluten sensitive are not. They are wheat sensitive. So instead of calling this non-celiac gluten sensitivity, we should be calling it non-celiac wheat intolerance. This is the point that Guandolini makes. And I agree with him based on the data and based on my own experience as well. All right. So I stay away from wheat, but I can have a beer and it won't affect me in any way, shape, or form. It's perfectly fine. So a lot of people are consuming gluten-free cakes, gluten-free, breads, etc. So they're using different flours, and a lot of those flours are very high in sugar, for instance, sorghum flour. And so, yes, you get end up with increased glucose spikes. And a lot of those flours, of course, are devoid of their fiber. And so you're going to get even bigger spikes. And so, yes, we've learned through continuous glucose monitoring that these gluten-free products are particularly egregious in terms of metabolic health. So, yes, you do need to watch your wheat intake if you're one of these people, but you don't need to watch your gluten intake. And what you really need to do is eat real food.
Hey, YouTube, if you enjoyed what you just saw, keep watching for more great content on how to improve your brain and your life.
Food's probably a lot more complicated than supplements. That if I reorganize my diet, maybe I'd get some other things that'd be good for me. Rather than just focusing on what to not eat, now I'm focusing on what I have to eat.